Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Coming up on DTNS, Apple may stop bundling headphones with their iPhones, why new U.S. trade rules might not affect Huawei at all, and can AI help us find a vaccine? This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, May 20th, 2020 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Salt Lake City, I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
We've had a wide-ranging good day internet today. If you want to hear us talk about Patrick Beja's accent, A&W root beer, ice cream, and more, get that wider, expanded show at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Xiaomi reported Q1 revenue rose 13.6%, beating expectations. The company says smartphone production in China has largely resumed and demand has rebounded. Sales rose thanks to rising prices for 5G phones and growing overseas sales as well.
Speaking of phones, Verizon is turning on 5G uploads in some of its 5G coverage area. That means Verizon 5G customers will see uploads that are 30% faster than LTE. Up until now, Verizon's 5G service only delivered 5G for download and still used LTE for its uploads.
AT&T is rolling out actual 5G, but of course, as we've talked about on this show, also calls their LTE 5GE or 5G Evolution, but they might not be doing that for long after the National Advertising Review Board, or NARB, recommended that AT&T cease using the term as well as the phrase 5G Evolution, the first step to 5G in its marketing material. The company says it respectfully disagrees, but is a supporter of the self-regulatory process and will comply with the decision. Last month, AT&T added 90 new markets for a total of 120 million customers across 190 markets with access to actual 5G that they can just call 5G for customers who have actual 5G-capable phones.
I love that. We respectfully disagree. We will comply, but we're not going to say how. Maybe you'll just forget. The SD Association announced the SD 8.0 memory spec for SD cards. SD Express card transfer speeds quadruple to 3,940 megabits per second with support for PCIe 4.0. To get those speeds, SD card readers need to support two PCIe 4 lanes. Other slots with PCIe 3 can still get twice the speed at 1,900 megabits per second. SD 8.0 cards will be backwards compatible and available across a range of sizes. The spec will allow reasonable transfer speeds for up to 4K and 8K video, as well as faster game loading as well. SD cards using the 8.0 spec are expected towards the end of the year.
Twitter acknowledged that they are indeed, testing a new setting among a quote-unquote limited group that lets users control who can reply to their tweets. Users can pick from one of three options: everyone, people you follow, or and only people you mention. If anyone outside the chosen setting or if you're outside the chosen setting, you can still view the tweet, like and retweet it, but you can't reply directly to the sender. The tweet thread will also include or indicate that replies have been limited.
Google's letting existing Google Fi customers use eSIM now on their iPhone XR, XS, XS Max, and 11 series or 2020 SE phones. Those are the iPhones that support dual SIM. New Google Fi customers have been able to do this since last month, but it was because they were setting up from scratch. The Verge notes that some users on Reddit report that you need to uninstall the Google Fi app from the iPhone, then add a cellular plan to the iPhone, then reinstall the Google Fi app, and then it'll work.
Ride-hailing company Didi said on Wednesday it will use AI to verify if Latin American drivers are wearing masks and have disinfected cars. Drivers will have to take a picture of themselves wearing the mask starting on May 22nd, and starting in June, they'll need to report body temperature and upload photos of daily vehicle disinfection. Passengers will also be required to wear masks, and Didi launched similar measures in China back in January.
All right, Scott, tell us the good news about Apple.
Well, this is maybe good news for some, or maybe we just expect this. We'll see. Analyst Ming-Chi Kuo believes Apple may not include wired headphones or ear pods in the next generation of iPhones. Heaven forbid. Kuo says Apple may heavily promote or even discount AirPods. Does not believe or expect new models of AirPods until 2021. Wired Apple headphones cost $29 right now, and the lowest priced AirPods are currently $159, even if you get a deal occasionally at $139, which is what I did. I'm not surprised by this. In fact, I'm also not surprised that it's probably going to be Apple who pulls the trigger and finally says, hey, no more wired earbuds in here. However, I kind of wish they would just make AirPods real cheap and have those in instead. I know they're not going to do that, but that would be really cool. That's truly the bridge to the wireless future, not this little half measure with not including it at all.
Well, you mean, you know, to bring down the price of AirPods to something that would be less of, you know, something you have to swallow if you want to buy a new iPhone. I mean, the whole thing about the ear pods, the wired ear pods, is, you know, people made a big stink when they got rid of the headphone jack. But it was like, okay, well, you're still getting them for free, right? You know, might be a dongle appropriate once you get a phone that, you know, has a lightning port, then you've got that. But, you know, in general, it's hard to really complain too much if you're getting earbuds that work for free. If you want something better, you get those separately. Yeah. Apple being like, possibly, no, you don't get them at all, but we'll maybe offer AirPods for something drastically reduced for a short period of time because our new version of AirPods aren't coming out till next year kind of thing. It is interesting. And I wonder, you know, people will be up in arms as they always are about how things change. But I wonder how this will end up driving a lot of sales for AirPods.
Ming-Chi Kuo is usually right about this stuff. So I'm not going to be surprised if this happens. I would imagine that Apple will reduce the price of the AirPods maybe below $100. For not the pro, right, but for the entry level, and then bundle that in. So, in other words, you can buy the iPhone, or you can, you know, get really cheap AirPods for less than $100 with the iPhone, and they'll push that when you're checking out. Hey, do you want to add AirPods for this super cheap price? They're really going to, I think, from Apple's side. Granted, you could look at this and say Apple is cheap and they want to make money off accessories and they're trying to force you into spending money on accessories. That's a perfectly legitimate point of view that I know a lot of you will hold. The other side of this is Apple looking at this and saying, look, we don't want to put in stuff that people aren't going to use. And if people already have AirPods or already have headphones, wireless headphones that they like that aren't AirPods, that's what we want them to do. That's why we got rid of the headphone jack. And so why would we put in this piece of plastic that's going to go to waste when everybody in our audience anyway is switching to these wireless headphones? And we want to push that adoption because then those headphones can be used on multiple phones and you're not making a bunch of headphones that nobody's going to use.
I'm just saying, imagine the box and you open it up and there's the phone. And then below that, you got the little tiny manual. And below that, two AirPods just laying there.
Oh, then, no. Imagine the box. This is what Apple wants. I guarantee it. Imagine the box. You open it up and it's the phone and that's it. Wireless charging, wireless headphones that you get separately. They don't want anything else in that box except the phone. I think that's their goal. Speaking of Apple, Apple and Google have made their exposure notification API live for the public. So health agencies can now use that API in their apps for Android and iOS. Companies say many U.S. states, 22 countries, have been provided API access already and more to come. This is phase one, if you remember. This is where the system works in apps. So you have to download an app to make it work, but it still has all the privacy protections, doesn't use geolocation and all of that stuff. Phase two is the one that will work at the operating system level and not require an app in order to start collecting the data. Google and Apple are in conversations with public health authorities about what system level features would be useful in that second phase.
Interesting. Do we know? I mean, this isn't that big a deal for users, really, because we're not going to see anything right away. I mean, we're not going to see anything that takes advantage.
If you're in North Dakota, they're going to have an app that takes the advantage of this, separate from an app they already have out that uses geolocation. So if you want the bigger privacy protection, you'll be able to opt for that. Utah's not going to have this. That health agency is not playing along with Apple, Google. But keep an eye on your health agency so that they will tell you when their app is ready to download or update to take advantage of this.
I gotta say, the rollouts of this, and I know that there are many stages and we're still at the very beginning, the companies have been really good about messaging and they've been really good about delivering, on dates that they've promised, if not sooner. And with that, we will move on to shopping. At Shopify Reunite, Shopify's first virtual version of its annual event, I believe this was the fifth year, the company unveiled a new business account and debit card option for customers called Shopify Balance, a buy now, pay later option called Shop Pay Installments, and a new local delivery product. Shopify says its AI-powered fulfillment network is also actively accepting merchant applications. Now, if you remember our story from yesterday, on the competitor side of things, yesterday, Facebook announced Facebook Shops, a tool to help businesses list products on Facebook pages and Instagram profiles. Now, right now, Shopify, it reaps the rewards of Facebook rolling this out, but it just goes to show you, and again, it's our current climate right now that leans heavily into this whole idea of, all right, let's do a little bit more of, that kind of consumer-to-consumer shopping situation. But Shopify is getting more robust, and Facebook Shops is getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, I think Facebook Shops, honestly, I know you're saying that Facebook will, and it makes sense to say Facebook will eventually want to just take this all away from Shopify. But I don't know whether that's true. I think Facebook likes the idea that they can leave that complex business of setting up inventory and tracking inventory and taxes and all this stuff that you may not realize out there that Shopify, Big Cartel, Woo, companies like that do, that Facebook isn't an expert in. They want those companies to take advantage of that. They're happy to let Shopify take advantage of that and then put that sort of things like Shopify Balance, buy now, pay later, into the Facebook Shop, because where Facebook's going to make the money is offering a simplified payment exit plan that Shopify can plug into, but also every Facebook Shop operator can then advertise on Facebook to get the people on Facebook to come to the Facebook Shop and shop in the Facebook. I mean, I think Facebook is the mall operator here, not the cash register operator. And Shopify is the, back of office accounting cash register operator. And the mall doesn't want to get into that business.
What could happen, though, it's very possible, if that cash register really rocks the joint and does amazingly well, there's no reason the mall, in this case Facebook, might not be interested in picking them up and buying them. So. Yeah. That's
Westfield
entirely
might
possible.
Buy Omron is what you're saying. Yeah, it's not impossible. And in this case, I think even more likely than that scenario. It's a good point.
Yeah, and they buy all kinds of little things that work well or jive well with what Facebook's goals are. And sometimes that's not exactly clear, but this seems like a clear one to me. It's one of the only missing aspects of the kinds of commerce you can do on Facebook is a more integrated solution for front end and back end. So,
and the reason they bought Giphy is they wanted that data. The reason they might buy a Shopify, more data.
Yep.
Get all that data. A couple of friends I know who run small, we want to sell you our t-shirts type of thing all over the world. It's like, there has been a conundrum for a while. Shopify is not the only option, but it's kind of the only option, unless you're going to build out the back end yourselves. And that's really complicated and definitely a little too big for the britches of a lot of you know, small folks who are setting out. That said, I also see all the time people who, I don't know, I follow on Instagram, let's say, and every, you know, 10th time they post, there's something that they're sort of selling. And I'm like, I would just wish this was less clunky. Like, I get what you're doing. I don't even hate you for it. Just, you know, give me something a little bit more streamlined so I understand what's going on. So I think that Facebook Shops is designed to solve that issue.
Yeah.
HBO Max launches on the 27th. Many of you have already signed up for their cheaper deal, but gives you HBO plus a lot of other content from Warner Brothers Media, TNT, TBS, etc. I hope a lot of old WB cartoons would be great if they could do that. Anyway, Warner Studios is also involved in this. DC movies, for example, and HBO Max originals. It costs the same as HBO alone at $14.99. Same as you're playing for Go if you're doing that. If Warner reaches a deal with a cable or streaming device platform, you may automatically get HBO Max if you're an HBO subscriber. Deals have already been announced with Apple, Charter, Google, YouTube TV as well. Wednesday, May 20th, Warner announced deals with Atlas. Altice, Cox, Microsoft, so think Xbox, NCTC, smaller cable operators, Samsung, Sony, so think PlayStation, and Verizon. The three big names without a deal yet are Amazon, Comcast, and Roku, and they're big names. Variety says Roku and Warner are close, but Amazon is not likely to happen. Oh, and Dish Network hasn't had regular HBO since November 2018, so there's that too. I'm personally confused as someone who has a really good phone plan with AT&T because I think I'm supposed to be getting it free, but I'm paying for it, and I think that's my fault, but I'm not sure because they haven't really explained it, so... There you go. You're one of those people.
They want you to feel that way. So any right. AT&T service will also be included in this. Also, you didn't mention Hulu. Hulu will be part of this. If you're on any of these folks with paying through the platform that Scott mentioned are having the deal, you probably won't be confused. May 27th, you'll get a notice that says, hey, guess what? You have access to HBO Max now as part of your HBO Now subscription. Isn't that great? But if you're on... Roku. If you're on one of these others that does not have a deal yet, Comcast and or Amazon, which never will have, then your HBO Now subscription will stay HBO Now, and you'll have to figure out. Do I want to get HBO Max? What platform can I get it on? Like, it sounds like you won't even have HBO Max apps on any platform that doesn't come to a deal.
Here's the wacky thing about all this. I got three different emails from HBO. One that was just like a regular, hey, look what's on HBO Go this month, because I'm an HBO Go subscriber. And then I got one that says, hey, you should join HBO Max because we're going to do it for $11 or whatever for the first year if you get in now, and you can cancel anytime. And then I got a third email that duped that one because it was a different email address. So because I've got email addresses in different places, probably a whole separate one at AT&T, I'm getting like eight messages of different, you know, options.
I won't even get into the fact that you keep saying HBO Go, which you can only use if you have a cable subscription to HBO, versus HBO Now, which is the one that you buy standalone when you don't have a cable subscription.
Which is actually the one I meant, which adds to this confusion. You're totally right.
All right, folks. The Wall Street Journal and The Economist have both reported that several trade experts out there believe that the new U.S. trade rules that we mentioned earlier this week may not end up affecting Huawei, the company that they were written for. The new rules say that any company using U.S.-made equipment or designs to make chips need a license if they have knowledge that the products they're making are destined for Huawei. So there's already an entity list that Huawei's on that says you can't sell to Huawei. But the loophole that the U.S. was trying to close was companies saying, well, we're not selling to Huawei. The chip maker is. So they said, look, chip maker, even if you're not in the United States, if you're using equipment or designs from the United States, you can't sell to Huawei. But the complexity of the supply chain means that a lot of chip makers sell to a distributor, not to Huawei. For instance, an Indian company named Flex assembles products for multiple companies, including Huawei. Flex could order chips from TSMC without telling TSMC who they're for. They might be for another of Flex's clients. They might be for multiple clients, including Huawei. But Flex would be the buyer and say, TSMC, we need this many chips. A U.S. Department of Commerce spokesman told the Wall Street Journal, quote, intermediate steps in the supply chain are irrelevant when there is no mystery as to the ultimate destination.
Clearly there is, though.
But what if there is? Exactly.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's sort of like, okay, do we put this on Flex and TSMC at this point? Well, the two of you need to have way better communication so that ultimately stuff doesn't land in the hands of Huawei, the company. I mean, both of those companies are going to be like, no, we have, that's how the supply chain works for us. That's, we can't do it any better than this.
And an Indian company, it would be in its rights to say, if the U.S. is like, well, you need to tell TSMC who these chips are for, the Indian company could say, why? I'm an Indian company. I don't need to follow your rules, which would mean then the Department of Commerce would have to write new trade rules to try to close that loophole. This may not end up being a problem. It may be that TSMC lawyers look at all this and go, well, it is probable that you know that these are destined for Huawei, so you know you better not say the chips. This is not one where we have a conclusion for you. It's watch for the headline that says TSMC cut off supplies for sure. TSMC has not admitted that. There's been headlines alleging that, but TSMC says, no, we're evaluating. Look for the headline that says TSMC absolutely has done this, or an absence of that headline and a story coming out later saying, yeah, Huawei seems to be shipping just as many phones because of this loophole, and you will know what that loophole is now.
Yep.
Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines. You'll get them in about 5 minutes at dailytechheadlines.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Ray Kurzweil has an opinion piece in Wired advocating more use of artificial intelligence to speed up vaccine research. He identifies the two main parts where he thinks AI could help. One is identifying the right molecules that a vaccine would target, and two, hold clinical trials. So what artificial intelligence can do is say, look, there's billions of possibilities, trillions of possibilities for molecules out there, but we can try every single one of them against COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, the actual virus, and see if they match up. And we can do that much faster. You know, the humans could never do that. And AI could do that because it can do some pattern matching. Or it could say, okay, we have a physiological model. We've trained machine learning to know how people respond to various molecules entering their system. So we can simulate the clinical trials and kind of eliminate the ones that very obviously would cause a problem. We'd still hold the clinical trials, of course, but we could toss out a few and save us some time by identifying the ones that wouldn't work right away. Now, humans come up with a few dozen possibilities out of trillions, test a few hundred humans to see what works. AI would test trillions of possibilities and thousands of simulated patients. Argonne National Laboratory doing this. Kurzweil predicts, given the exponential nature of progress in this field, I believe by the end of the decade, we'll be able to realistically model all biology and simulate interventions for diseases. But we need to evaluate Kurzweil's claims. Sarah, tell us what Alex Engler has been saying.
Okay. So on April 20th, Alex Engler, a professor who teaches data science over at Georgetown, studies implications of AI, wrote, "Artificial intelligence won't save us from coronavirus." And he has a few identifiers of ways to avoid falling for specific AI claims. He says
specious AI claims. So we're looking for claims that are out of the ordinary. And what's great about this is it's two Wired articles here. We went straight to the article that Alex Engler posted on the Brookings Institute. And I figured, OK, let's go through Kurzweil's claims here and test them against Engler's system. So is he a subject matter expert? Well, I'm going to say yes. Does anybody disagree with me? Kurzweil is an AI subject matter expert.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
He's not a company that's just applying AI with not knowing how it works. AI needs a lot of data. Does the relevant data exist? Well, the data on the viruses exists. So that part isn't questionable. What's questionable is, do we have the right data to understand how these molecules will interact with humans?
Well, can I use this example you used before the show where you made me feel smart for one, not for once, but for today, you made me feel very smart. You make me feel smart all the time, Tom, but I basically said, look, there are, where my head starts to get into the weeds on this thing is how complicated the human testing can be, because there are so many of us, and right down to individual levels, you can have different results depending on what you're looking for. This kind of research seems like it would be hard to emulate with an AI, when what you really need is a whole bunch of flesh and blood bodies across a huge range of pre-existing conditions, medical conditions, age groups, races, everything, all of it, all those factors. And I couldn't wrap my head around how an AI like this or any other that anyone would talk about would be able to do that. And you made a pretty good point about that. So there, I've set you, I've tossed the ball to you. Now you tell
what was
me
the
what
point I made again?
But
what you're looking at is, would a healthy individual likely have a very negative reaction to this? And you can model that sort of behavior, and machine learning can look at patterns and say, oh yeah, usually when we see this molecule, that causes adverse problems. Is that what I was getting at?
Yeah. And the idea is that it's, in my head, I had a kind of a narrow view of how much an AI could do, but your point was all of these are just points of data.
Yeah.
Like at some point you gather, let's say there are 2 trillion variations in a kind of biology we need to have as part of this study. It's capable of taking that data and then working with that data. And in my head, I was thinking it was just too big, too complex. I think Kurzweil's whole point is we will get to the point maybe sooner than later that it won't be that complex. It won't take that much time.
He is advocating, let's use AI to narrow it down. He's not advocating we can skip human trials or anything.
Sure.
Another one of Engler's points is, beware accuracy predictions. They may be skewed. I don't think this applies to Kurzweil because he's not saying an accuracy prediction in this case. But it's worth bearing in mind when you're evaluating AI claims. If 90 of 100 people are healthy and an AI detects 6 unhealthy people, it can claim 96% accuracy because it said, oh, 90 are healthy, right. 6 are unhealthy. But it's missing 40% of the unhealthy people because it only detected 6 of the 10 unhealthy people. So you have to be aware how those numbers can be massaged.
Yeah. I mean, I love the quote itself. It's an actual, this is so Kurzweilian, if that's a word. He says, given the exponential nature of progress in this field, I believe by the end of the decade, we'll be able to realistically model all biology and simulate interventions for diseases without the need of human trials. Like if that is not,
That will happen in 10 years. Kurzweil likes to say he has an 86% success rate of predicting things. Other people take issue with that, noting that, in fact, we did have a bust and he predicted we wouldn't have one. He missed the dot-com bust, among other things. But he's not saying we need that now. He's saying we do need AI to help narrow it down. Also, Engler says real-world deployment generally degrades AI performance. So even if it's good in the machine, it won't be as good in public. So keep that in mind. I don't think that hurts Kurzweil's case here. You must enable an intervention to really matter. That's built in. Well, the intervention is you actually are going to create a vaccine and you're going to do clinical trials. AI is good at minute details, not big events. In this case, that's a positive to Kurzweil. He's saying, I don't want to pick the trends of who's going to get the virus. I want to come up with this minute thing that will cause the virus to go away. Don't forget, AI will be biased. I think that is a big problem with vaccine research, is that you will be training it in the human side on data that will be biased. It's very difficult to find unbiased data out there that treats all humans equally and will work with everyone. But I guess if it works in some humans, it's likely to work in most. So that may not be fatal to this. And the future of AI systems is more promising. And in fact, Engler cites AI-designed drugs starting human trials as an example where AI is doing well. So overall, I think Kurzweil's prediction in this case passes the Engler test fairly well.
Maybe between now and then, we build an AI that can predict whether Kurzweil's predictions are going to be correct. And then we can make another AI on top of that that
Let's
will predict.
Let's train a machine learning algorithm on Kurzweil's past predictions and results. It's a great idea,
yes,
Scott. It's good to work
actually,
on. Yeah, you can't just train him. He's only one person.
That's right.
That's right.
Well, you are all one person yourselves, unless you're, I don't know, some other beast. But you can join in the conversation in our Discord, which you can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS. All are welcome.
Let's take a look at the mailbag.
Oh, let's. This one came in from Tim. Tim has an interesting conundrum. He says, we live in a small rural mountain community of about 1,800 folks. Recently, a broadband research group acquired money to install a tower that would significantly boost access and speeds to our community. They identified our property as the best location to place it. They're offering $200 a month lease to us in perpetuity for land use, and then 50 megabits down. Haven't stated what's up, but at least 50 down for life complimentary. I'm considering countering with the above, as well as saying I also want a hard line into the house, as well as having access to their highest available speed at all times. What are your thoughts? Should I consider other things before agreeing? Because they want to begin soon.
Well, Tim, I would say get a lawyer. If you're signing a long-term in perpetuity lease for land use, you need a lawyer to look over all the ins and outs of this. I would also say it can't hurt to counter that. I think saying, look, I don't want 50 megabits per second down when eventually you'll have gig down. I want the highest speed available that you can possibly ever give me in perpetuity. It should always be the top level. I think that's fair to ask for that. I mean, because otherwise they're nickel and diming you. So first of all, get a lawyer to make sure that there's nothing else in the lease that they could use to weasel other things. And yeah, second counter for a little bit of a better deal. I think.
And if
fair.
There's
a,
yeah, if anybody out there is like, I actually went through this something similar where I knew somebody who would, please let us know feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com, because I'm sure the whole kind of like, but this is good for the entire community is one of those things where it's sort of hard to say no, because you've got some pressure of the people around you potentially.
Sure.
Shout out to patrons at our master and grandmaster levels, including Jeffrey Zilks, Ken Hayes, and Brad Schick. Also, thanks to the one, the only, Scott Johnson.
Whoa.
Scott, what? I know. It just keeps getting better every week because we're so excited to have you with us. What's been going on over the last week?
Well, thank you very much. There's a very prominent rugby coach in Australia with my name, so I'll share it with him. It's fine. Okay. Hey, so there's lots of stuff going on, but I want to focus on one thing real quick, and that is for the next 2 weeks, there's only 2 weeks of it left. For the five full weeks of May, we've been giving free art classes to kids. My daughter and I, we come on a Saturday, we stream it, and we tell everybody, you know, get different things that we can work on and do. And they all do it at the same time. They send us the art. We put it in a gallery. It's a lot of fun and a great way to keep your kids occupied for a good hour and a half on Saturdays. And it costs nothing. So if you want to be a part of the last 2 weeks, we're going to focus on character design and art. You can head on over to frogpants.com/art class. All the details are there. Previous sessions are there. You'll also find those galleries I mentioned and everything you'll need if you decide to be there. So grab your kids. Bring them there. Kids from 0 to 99. You can be as old as you want to do this thing if you want to. But we're having a lot of fun with it. We're going to miss it when it's gone. That's this Saturday at 1 p.m. Mountain Time. Check out the details at frogpants.com/artclass.
We are taking suggestions from folks in our audience to share the love to projects they love. And longtime supporter Paolo wrote, "Would you be willing to help this project get over the line? It's from a friend of mine, a great artist, and it would be amazing if you could help. Sofia Ribeiro's new album, Casa." Sofia writes on her Kickstarter, "I have 12 new songs and I will make a quarantine album accompanied by amazing musicians who will record from their homes." The best part is we put this in the lineup. Paolo is one of our patrons who has access to see the lineup, saw that we put it in, and noticed that the Kickstarter went over the line after we put it in the lineup. Whether it was because patrons were seeing it there before we even mentioned it or not, I don't know. But you still might want to share the love and go check it out. So we'll have the link in the show notes, or just search Kickstarter for Casa, Ribeiro's new album.
Nice.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We love your feedback. Keep it coming. I say that every day, and I really mean it. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. And when I say join us live, I mean that too. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
You have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.